The kickoff for the Boston Pops at Tanglewood this season will take place on Sunday afternoon, featuring one of country music's most talented artists, Vince Gill. Gill is the winner of 20 Grammy Awards, 18 CMA Awards, is a member of the Grand Ole Opry, and will perform some of his favorite songs from his illustrious career, and of course be with Keith Lockhart and the Boston Pops at the Shed at Tanglewood. It's a great pleasure to welcome Vince Gill to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, you bet, Joe. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. It's very nice to have you aboard. So
thank you.
You did this with the Boston Pops in May, and now you're on the road with them coming to Tanglewood on Sunday. So I assume it was a pleasant experience the first time.
It was unbelievable. It was really a big deal to me. I'd gotten to work with the Pops once before in Keith with my wife Amy with some Christmas music some years ago, but this was the first time back in May where some of the songs that I'd written and had orchestrations for, I got to hear such beauty done to my songs. It was amazing, and they were kind enough to invite me out to Tanglewood, which I've been to once before with James Taylor a couple of 4th of Julys ago, and it's a beautiful, magical place. I'm really looking forward to coming.
I'm fascinated by what it is like for you, who are used to having a band behind you, to suddenly hear your music that you're so familiar with, obviously, that is such a part of you, take on this new life with a full orchestra.
Yeah, it goes to a different place, you know. It then becomes, to me, in a sense, it transcends any kind of genre that it's connected to. Then it doesn't sound country, it doesn't sound pop, it doesn't sound anything but a beautiful song and a great orchestration and a whole bunch of musicians that make it legitimate. And to stand in front of that many pieces and hear that much elegance and that much beauty is really, you know, I don't ever get to do it. You know, it's always
right.
Been mostly with Christmas music that you get to hear symphonies play and play with orchestras. And so for these beautiful songs of mine that have, you know, shaped my career, to hear them enhanced so beautifully by these kinds of musicians and Keith and under his guidance, it's really magical. It's kind of overwhelming sometimes. It's very emotional to hear it so beautifully played.
What goes into the orchestrations?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's above my pay grade. The guys that can do that, you know, that can write orchestrations and write things for all the different elements of an orchestra. You know, I'm pretty meat and potatoes guy, and I don't read very well, and so that's all. You know, that's new ground for me, and just to, you know, and plus it's important that an arranger, you know, keeps the integrity of what the song is, and then all the orchestrations don't make it bombastic or make it sound this or make it sound that. It really honors, you know, great orchestrating is really about serving the song just exactly like what we do in the studio when we make our records. We're trying to serve that song with the best thing possible and what it needs most. And so in the majority of cases with these lush ballads, it's very string oriented and pads and beautiful movement like that, and not a lot of timpanis and brass and things like that. I've noticed that my music doesn't really handle that well, you know, much pomp and circumstance. So it's really a beautiful evening, and in a place like Tanglewood outdoors, I'd never been there before until I got to come out there with James. Amy and I came out a couple of years ago to celebrate the 4th with him, and what a magical place. And so even, you know, it's going to be even more magical to get to be playing outdoors.
What is it like to realize that you have the type of career that is not genre-based, it is not in one classification, that you and your music can just as comfortably play with the Boston Symphony Orchestra's Pops as you can at the Grand Ole Opry?
Well, I hope that's a testament to my willingness to be an open-minded musician, you know, and not be a staunch supporter of only one thing. I think there's elements of every music that are beautiful, and why not find a way to try to collaborate with as many different people and have the opportunity. I think it's an opportunity to learn. You know, for me, to go into a place that isn't my comfort zone, so to speak, but it makes me makes me really use my ears. It makes me really play well with others, sort of, so to speak, you know. And I just, you know, I've always loved the element of music that makes you collaborate with someone else. I've never had that much fun playing music by myself. Music has to be conversational, and that's what makes it compelling, is to have a conversation with somebody. And that's what being with another musician gives you the opportunity to do. And then if you go outside your comfort zone and be willing to go play with the great guitar player that might be a jazz player. I got to record with Earl Klug not long ago, and a great trumpeter named Chris Bode. We did a duet together on his record. And so if I open my mind, then, you know, all I have the opportunity to do is make great new friends and open my mind to learning.
With that said, you mentioned your wife Amy Grant several times, and I'm curious as to whether it opens, or does it deepen a personal relationship when the two of you are artists? Obviously, you have a personal relationship, but then there is a professional relationship as well. But doesn't that deepen because of that conversation of being, because you're artists in that setting?
I think so. It's really amazing to get to share the thing that kind of moves you the most is music, you know, with your partner. You know, that's a rare gift. Not very many people probably get to do that. So I feel very fortunate that my wife understands what I do and I understand what she does. And at times we kind of reach into each other's world and help, you know, support and all those things, you know. I've gotten to produce a couple of her records over the years, and she's sung duets with me, and we've written some songs together, and just in small doses, never in, you know, we decided that we didn't want to be Sonny and Cher just because we got married, you know, so we kind of kept, you know, a respectful boundary around each other's career, and we laugh all the time about it, because when we get in a musical situation, she says, well, here's what's interesting, he says, we're both used to getting our way. So it's never weird, but it's always just kind of fun to watch, you know?
I had heard this, and I don't know whether I didn't believe it or I just thought it was one of those things that wasn't perhaps as big of a deal as it was, but you got an offer from Mark Knopfler to join Dire Straits.
I did, yeah. Let's see, how long has that been? 23 years ago? 24 years ago? I was in the process of changing record companies, and I'd been in Nashville for 7 or 8 years, made 3 or 4 albums, and not much success, you know, not much had happened for me as an artist. And Mark knew of my playing and my singing and came to see me in New York City and said, hey, would you consider joining this band with me? And I said, boy, I could, you know, I didn't have any money. I was struggling just to pay for my house and stuff, you know. And this would have solved all of those problems. But I told him, I said, you know what? I said, I can't turn my back on what I believe I'm supposed to do. And I'm supposed to do something in country music. It hasn't happened yet. But if I don't do it, I'll feel like I'm kind of quitting and giving up on something that I've dreamed about my whole life. And so I said, I'm going to say no. I really regret saying no, because I love his playing. I love the musicality of Mark Knopfler.
Right.
But I just decided to find a way to bet on myself, and I got lucky, well, truth be told. And not long after that, a song came out that was that career song, you know, and changed everything. But I had no reason to believe it was coming.
Because Pocket Full of Gold went on to become a platinum certified album, and this is in 1991, and it's a huge deal.
Yeah, and the album before that was really the breakthrough record that had When I Call Your Name in it, and I'd already released a single off of that record that hadn't done much, you know, so I was right back where I had been before, you know, just kind of ambling up the charts without much fanfare, and so I said, well, here I go again, and then Mark's offer came, and then I said, I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to hang in here, you know, and it turned around, and so it was one of the lucky decisions I made.
What do you make of the country music industry? I mean, you're still very much a part of it, but given the changes in the entire recording industry and the way albums are sold and so forth, what do you make of the state of the country music industry, and are you still comfortable in that?
Well, I don't think I have much of a presence at radio currently, you know, and they've proven me that over the last number of years that's probably not going to be part of my plan, is to get an awful lot of airplay with a new record. And I understand that. That's the way it always works, and no matter what genre you sit in. And so I still feel, what's interesting is I feel like I'm better now than I ever have been. So that's a mind bender, that you're doing your best work and you feel like it goes largely unnoticed by the great commercial world, you know, but it doesn't change whether it's good or not. So I take a lot of comfort in that and realize I'm getting better as a songwriter and singer and player and all those things. So I just continue to do it, and I don't let the results have much of an impact on what I do or choose to do. I like some of it, and some of it I don't, but that's always been the case in every generation of country music. There have been records I loved and records I didn't love, and that never changes, you know? And,
right.
And the great stuff is still great, you know, when it shows up. And so that's, you know, that never changes. A great song will find its way.
And then in the meantime, you get to play with the Boston Pops. And that's not too shabby.
You know, and that's really is a big deal. I'm not just saying that because I'm on the phone with you and all that. But when I was a little boy and I had the records of Chet Atkins, my childhood hero as a guitar player, he recorded a lot with the Boston Pops and Arthur Fiedler.
Right.
And so I have all this history of seeing Arthur Fiedler's face on these record covers with Chet and listening to, you know, my favorite guitar player with his beautiful orchestrations. And so they were rock stars to me as a kid. And so when I got the opportunity that they said they wanted me to come up, I was going, yeehaw. The cat's Chet got to pick with.
Well, Vin Skill will be the special guest with the Boston Pops Orchestra with Keith Lockhart conducting on Sunday. It's July 7th at 2:30 in the afternoon at the Shed at Tanglewood. And you can find out more information by going to tanglewood.org, tanglewood.org. Vin Skill, a great pleasure to have you on the phone. Thank you very much for being with us, and a great pleasure to speak to you. Safe travels here to you.
All right, JoJo. Thanks so much, pal.
Thanks so much. Again, bye-bye. You can find out more about the Boston Pops performance on Sunday. That's the 7th of July at 2:30 by going to tanglewood.org. We'll continue our live broadcast from Tanglewood on WAMC.